This is the Friday, April 17th, 2015 version of the Market Plus segment. Joining us now is Elaine Cubb. Elaine, welcome back.
Pleasure to be here.
Welcome back to Market to Market and welcome back to America.
Yeah.
Global traveler just got back from Ethiopia.
Yeah, it was so different there, but really valuable for me to get a long-term perspective for what African agriculture, I mean, the way that that's going to play into the global grain trade. And we're reminded of the importance of this. Saudi Arabia just bought a piece of the Canadian wheat board, right, or the former Canadian wheat board. So I think that, you know, that part of the world, the Middle East and Africa, is going to be a bigger and bigger part of what happens to our grain here. So it was really valuable for me.
All right. And it was hot and dry in Ethiopia.
Very hot and dry.
Well, now that kind of leads us right into our buddy Phil from Ontario's first question for the segment. He says long-range weather forecasts for the U.S. Midwest say extremely hot and dry. How long can the market ignore it?
This is a really interesting dilemma of how to interpret this right now, and I appreciate questions from Phil all the time. But so you look at the drought monitor right now, and you do see in the Western Corn Belt significant areas of concern, severe drought in Oklahoma and the building of drought in the Dakotas and Minnesota. However, you look at these forecasts, long-range forecasts for hot and dry, the El Nino effect, which they are more confident in saying now, is not so much hot and dry, but hot and wet for the Corn Belt, for most of the Corn Belt, the Eastern Corn Belt, which is actually generally supportive to yield. So you've got a situation where the current situation looks like there should be a bullish lean, but if you've got an El Nino, you could start to put a bearish slant on it. So it's really up in the air. And I think, I mean, if the drought in the Western Corn Belt does not ease before, let's say, May, I think we've got a real chance to have not $6 corn or any such thing, but perhaps to get better than our 420 level, to break out of this range and have some kind of a weather market.
Now, as we talk about the El Nino, it seemed as though for the past 2, possibly 3 years, each spring we've had this discussion, appears to be an El Nino building. It appears that we'll finally trip that SOI into El Nino territory. And then each time we've kind of been tricked and it hasn't developed. You mentioned there's a little more confidence in declaring it. Does it, as an analyst, do you believe the market is trading as though we are anticipating an El Nino?
I guess maybe that's why we have not seen any. So we have not seen any real concern about the Western Corn Belt's drought. So maybe that is why. But you know, I don't think that the El Nino necessarily has such a strong effect in the Dakotas. It's not. That's more of an argument for the Eastern Corn Belt. So, to the degree that the market should care about the Western Corn Belt's production, and it should, because the corn acres have shifted north and west over the past 10 years, I believe there is still more justification for some risk premium that has not showed up yet or is lagging.
Okay. Now, if we're looking to add risk premium in the market, that adds us to Dietrich in Homestead, Iowa's question, looking at the price of corn, and he's speaking to it from a feed needs perspective. What are your thoughts on prices for the fourth quarter of this year and the first three quarters of next year? Do you go ahead and start to buy now in case we don't get that El Nino situation?
Yeah, I think you look at the corn market, the contracts all the way out for the next 12, 18 months, it's very flat. You've got a very standard structure of about 3.5 cents of carry per month, very flat. So if you like these prices now and you are worried about some sort of a rally in the spring or summer, which I think is not a certain thing yet, but it could happen, then sure, it perhaps makes sense to be making some coverage here. And we've seen that activity being done. Some commercial traders, some ethanol plants, or perhaps it does livestock feeders that are getting in there. We see this in the CFTC reports that they are growing more net long. So yeah, there seems to be the idea that this is a good price to be buying. Maybe you would have some rally in the spring or summer that you want to avoid. So yeah, sure, why not?
Because there's not a whole lot of downside potential in this market. We're not holding up for a big supply change knowing we've got smaller acres and presumably a lower yield just given historical averages.
Exactly true. So I don't think that's urgent. I mean, I guess if I was a cattle feeder that was feeding my own grain, I would, you know, you have to make this decision of where do you want to book your profits, right? But I don't think, there's any great urgency or any great motivation to not make these sales because, there's not a lot of downward pressure. We are fairly confident there's going to be, we're going to know what the yield will be or what the production will be in the next year, and it's going to stay pretty flat. I think that we are experiencing the market. This is just kind of where we are for now.
All right. Now, you talked about for cattle feeders trying to decide where to book their profits. Mm-hmm. And we've got a question here from Olivia in St. Louis. She sent this in on Twitter. She's curious, what is the forecast for U.S. beef prices? Let's talk consumer prices. Mm-hmm. What can we expect to see? Where has the U.S. consumer been for the past couple months?
Yeah, I haven't been to a grocery store in the United States for obviously at least the last 3 weeks while I've been in Ethiopia. But my understanding has been that, you know, the beef market has really bifurcated, right? Like, we've got a situation where hamburger has become quite expensive compared to any other meat product that's on the grocery shelves. And yet the consumers keep buying it, and they keep especially buying the prime cuts and the good cuts of meat, the table beef. So I expect that that will continue. I mean, we have fairly strong economic ideas. We do not expect the economy to suddenly fall apart right now. People have relatively cheap fuel, so they don't have to spend too much money on their fuel. They can spend it on beef and put it on the grill. I think that beef prices are not going to have any more pressure than usual going forward.
Well, and something interesting came out while you were away. We saw, it was either last week or the week before, a report came out that stated U.S. consumers, for the first time in history, I believe, are now spending more in restaurants than they are at grocery stores.
Wow.
So there's an indication that the economy is staying relatively strong.
Great.
So now, strong economy there for the U.S. consumers. We go to DW in Tennessee for a question on the bean market. DW sounds a little bearish. Curious, how soon till we get beans down under $8?
Hopefully never. I mean, I do think that there is a threat that the bean market is going to have some pressure here in the next few months when the Argentina farmers and the Brazilian farmers, when that supply comes online, as we talked about in the show. But I don't think that that pressure is going to take you all the way down to $8. I mean, that would be a dollar and a half move from this point at least, or about that amount. And honestly, within the domestic bean market, the crush margins right now are very positive. There's every reason to believe that domestic demand to keep crushing these beans is going to remain strong, that these prices are profitable for processors. So I hopefully am not expecting to see an $8 in front of a bean price. It might move lower, but I don't believe it will move that much lower.
And DW is curious about down under $8. Yeah. You think we're a long way away from that?
I hope so.
Now, one of the impacts, of course, that always affects wheat, beans, and the meat market, of course, is the strong U.S. dollar. You mentioned domestic demand for beans has been very strong. This dollar, is this going to create permanent headwinds? What do you see for the ag commodities facing a dollar right around parity, that 100 mark?
Yeah, and it's not just the ag commodities either. It's any sort of manufactured good or any good that you're trying to sell out of the United States. So that's actually a headwind for the entire economy. And we saw the dollar go up again today. We saw sort of this expectation that these interest rates are going to rise. Like, I believe that that monster is still hiding under the bed for the overall markets, is the idea that these interest rates will rise. So, you know, I think that the dollar probably has room to go up, and that means that there has room to apply more pressure to the commodities, to the grain commodities in particular. But hopefully we have enough strong domestic demand to keep things stable.
How high up could this dollar run, in your opinion? Are we 105, 110, 150?
Yeah, no, I believe that most of it's already been priced in. So perhaps, yeah, we have another 5 or 10% to go. But I believe that the majority of this rally is already understood. You know, the ideas of the American strength versus European non-strength, or the ideas of American interest rate rises, I think is fairly well understood that this will happen. So hopefully it's already been mostly priced in.
All right. Well, Elaine Cubb, thank you so much for taking the time to join us this week. We hope you have a safe trip home.
Thank you very much.
Thanks to all of you for sending in your questions via Facebook and Twitter. Please continue to do so, and we will get expert analysis right to you. Thanks for watching, and have a great week.